Red Debate, a rather deflated Red Debate. I'm Tom Burgess, and I've got with me Chris Smith.
Hello, mate. How you doing?
Probably not as good as last time we spoke, just before the City game. But, well, yeah, deflated, as I say. How about yourself?
Yeah, morale is certainly low. I think, well, we said in the last podcast, I wasn't that confident about the City game. I thought we'd lose it. The circumstances of how we lose it is obviously what particularly hurts. Losing the records in these circumstances also hurts. And I think it all kind of stems back to, regardless of if you hate us or love us, we've crushed everyone for 2 years, and anything other, particularly for a Liverpool fan, is different, and people struggle to accept change, and this is a change to what we're used to, and it's hard to accept, I think.
Yeah, so obviously we've been humbled 4-1 at home to City. It's the third home loss of the season, having had that ridiculous record at home. Do you think it's the manner of the defeat which is the most detrimental thing, or just the fact that we've lost?
No, I do think it's the manner, because I think the mistakes, we'll talk about obviously in more detail, but the mistakes, I'm worried that it suggests a mental fragility from a normally top class, unbelievably strong character. And not just those mistakes as well. I think there's other factors to think about. And I think the subs were quite uninspiring. And I think the lack of fight and lack of intensity is also something you normally wouldn't associate with a Liverpool team, particularly under Jurgen Klopp.
Yeah, agree with all of those points. I think back to front, that, like, it has an impact on the side back to front. I wanted to talk at some point about the psychological impact of you know, a poor run of form and the net effect of a poor run of form rather than just individual losses. Obviously, it's a big defeat, isn't it? I'll start by asking you, did you think that when Salah equalises, how did you think the game would go from there? Did you think we'd lose at that point?
No. Interesting question, isn't it? Because I've had a lot of discussion about how amazing City are. And I'd like to be clear, I think City were easily the better team. Phil Foden definitely deserves a mention on the podcast. He's a top talent. And I know Liverpool fans don't like him, but Sterling as well ran us ragged pretty much all game. So I do think they were by far the better team. Having said that, can you think of a save that Alisson actually had to make? Obviously, he made the Foden one, but they scored from that, didn't they? So, I mean, the one he didn't make, I was referring to the one that he does save, and then Gundogan slams it in. So, they didn't create anything either, really. They controlled the game better than we did, but I thought both teams weren't really at the races for most of the game. So when we equalised, did I think we'd win it? I think they were probably the better team still, but if you take the Alisson errors out, it may well have gone differently. And obviously it's very easy to say that in hindsight, but I say that because I can't really think of another thing that Alisson actually had to do. Pretty much every time they had a shot, it went in.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the statistics on the balance of play, I'll go back to my question. I thought it was going to end up with a point each after Salah scored. I really thought that's how the game was going to end. If you look at the game overall, I agree with you. I think City were much better than us. They were just more clinical than us. I know it's an overused term in football, but both sides had 8 shots. They had 5 on target. We had 3. They had 5 big chances to our 1. But then if you look at the completed passes, we had a lot more completed passes than them, 573 to 444, and 115 of ours were in the attacking third versus 85 of theirs. I just think the quality of opportunity and the quality of possession that they were having was far greater than ours.
Yeah,
they looked more able to hurt us.
You've got to give it to them as well. Like, the Alisson mistakes were shocking, but they finished them superbly.
Yeah, they did. They just turned the heat up on us. There's that great Gundogan quote from a few years ago about coming to Anfield and how you can think you're in a game. And then I can't remember the exact analogy that he uses, but he says something like, and then within 15 minutes, in the time it takes you to light a fire, or he says something about lighting a fire. He says, in the space of 15 minutes, Liverpool can go and score 3 goals. And that's basically what they did to us. They had that, obviously, Gundogan puts them 2-1 up after 73, and then it just felt like the next 2 goals to make it 3-1 and 4-1 were just one after the other. It was just like we caved, and they just turned a screw on us. But
and that word you just used there, caved, is not something you'd expect from a Jurgen Klopp team, and that's what I'm most worried about. I think the fragility mentally, the players looked for the first time, I think, in the last 2 years, utterly devoid of confidence, and that is worrying. And I think
it's worrying, but it goes back to the Villa game. I was talking to a mate about which loss was it? One of our recent losses, anyway. I was talking to him about one of our recent losses. And just saying how it was alarming compared to the Villa game, because in the Villa game, we just sort of gave up and then the scoreline escalated. It seemed to happen a little bit against City. It just seemed like we were beaten when the second went in.
I agree. I also think, though, before those mistakes, like, we get to 1-1, but it's in incredibly fortunate circumstances. It's a glaring error, obviously, from Diaz as well. I do worry that they were so comfortable in that game, and whether it's the lack of intensity from us or we're quite predictable at the moment. Even Salah, who scores the penalty, and I know he's top scorer of the league and stuff, he does the same move every time now. He's almost like he's afraid to go onto his right foot, which he used to be able to do, and turn defenders inside and out. He's so desperate now to do the same move, cut in, get it on his left foot. I can't really recall another time where at any stage of the game we had them rattled, which is so unlike us at Anfield in a big game. And historically, we've done that quite comfortably to City at Anfield.
Yeah, we didn't really dominate any areas of the pitch. I think that's just... you know, that takes us on to talking about our areas of the pitch. I don't think we dominated any areas of the pitch. I thought that Salah clearly wanted to try and play in through that channel behind, between Diaz and Zinchenko, which has been Salah has been playing down those channels to great effect throughout his time in the Premier League. But beyond, shy of that working, in the commentary they were talking about Mane and Salah continuing to make the runs. I didn't think Mane was. I thought Mane was dropping short, looking for the ball way more than he usually does. But should we go through the team then? Obviously, you've touched on Alisson already. Is there much to say about the Alisson situation? Are you buying into this idea that do you think it's a worry or?
As I said before, I think the worry is mental fatigue. I don't want to say too much on Alisson because I absolutely adore him, but they were Karius-esque howlers, weren't they?
They were shocked,
and
mate.
They've come this time from obviously Alisson, who has proven himself, and it does happen to everyone. I think every goalkeeper, even the world's best, has had them. But the nature of the mistake is probably the most worrying thing. They were quite bizarre errors. It wasn't like a fumble for his hands. It was almost like he'd forgotten how to be a professional footballer briefly. Particularly the second one, it's like he couldn't kick it properly.
Well, he gets let off the hook in the first one and then makes a mistake again.
Exactly, yeah. And both of them, like the first one that he'd got off the hook with in the first mistake, again, like what was he doing? It's not a fumble where like the shot's happened and it's just a mistake. It's almost like it's in his head that he either is confused about what he should do or... he's literally just forgotten what's happening at that moment in time.
Yeah, it was mad. I was a bit disappointed that they gave the ball back to him. I think it was Wijnaldum gave the ball back to him after he'd fucked the first one.
Just lamp it.
Yeah.
But I don't think it is a major problem. Like already at times this season, Alisson has saved us, and I'm sure he's going to save us again. He is, in my view, comfortably in the top three in the world. It says it all, but he's just one of almost every player in the squad who's slightly off form at the moment. And those two howlers were one-offs, I think.
Well, I used to say this a lot when Simon Mignolet was in goal. And obviously, Mignolet, ironically, probably didn't make as many clear-cut errors with his feet as Alisson has to this point.
Yeah.
Alisson
for his ball playing ability, but he's sometimes shocking, like absolutely shocking.
Yeah, he's cost us a few times now. Obviously, the notable one against Leicester back in when Demarai Gray pinched it off him when he was trying. Yeah. Was it Iheanacho pinched off him when he was trying to cross it? Mignolet probably didn't make as many recognised errors with his feet as I can recall. But anyway, back to my point is, I used to say quite a lot about Mignolet, about his nervousness having a ripple effect throughout the back line, and it just his presence and anxiety causing problems for us, basically. I think you can talk about that happening throughout the team now. And I personally think this is why Klopp keeps turning to Milner, because I think Milner, you know, for his obvious limitations, he is and can be a steadying influence. But let's go through the defence then. Personnel?
I wanted Henderson in the midfield. I think, obviously, you wouldn't change Trent or Robbo. And for me, Fab looked a little bit off the pace. It wasn't his best game, obviously. I think everyone can see that. Did we rush him back? Possibly, but you can understand why. It's City at the end of the day. But I really did think Henderson should have been in the middle to try and control that game a little bit more and just add a bit of intensity. If that meant throwing on one of the new signings, of Kavak's the obvious answer, I would have happily seen it. I thought the back four were okay. Obviously, none of them particularly made any glaring errors. Trent, you could argue, didn't do good enough for the first goal and closing Sterling down. But Sterling did have one of those games where he was electric. And I think he was probably the player who benefited the most from having no fans there, because obviously no one was on his back.
Yeah, Raheem was brilliant. But I think I agree with you. I don't think any of them had particularly poor performances, but I think collectively it didn't work. Like we mentioned on the last podcast, if you lose key personnel and key attributes that personnel bring, like Van Dijk and Gomez, they're obviously both absolutely rapid and Van Dijk wins everything in the air, which enabled us to play a high line. Klopp seems to have stuck with the high line, despite the fact that Henderson and Fabinho aren't the quickest across the ground. And I think because they're not natural centre-halves, I think Pep tried to play into that. Like Bernardo Silva, Phil Foden and Raheem Sterling were all noticeably carrying the ball a lot more than I mean, they're all ball carriers, obviously, but they were carrying the ball a lot more than they usually do. And I wonder whether that was an instruction just to try and draw our centre-backs out of shape, which worked a lot. City completed 28 take-ons, which is a lot.
Yeah, that is a lot. It does worry me, the stability of the team there, because naturally you've got two centre-backs who want to be more progressive and play higher up. So they're obviously going to get sucked out because it's in their nature to do. And especially when you're playing against Phil Foden, who's obviously the false nine, who's coming deeper to get it. It's natural for them to step out and want to do that. And I'm fine with it. But you're right that we don't have that recovery pace without Gomez and Van Dijk to make up for that. And I think the naivety of both Henderson and Fabinho was on show throughout certain moments of the game, across the entire match, to be honest. We got away with most of them, and obviously City weren't necessarily at their most rampant best until the second half. But the first goal, I think, is a classic example of Trent and Fabinho not having a good understanding of each other.
Yeah, apparently Fabinho is quite a quiet lad on the pitch. Doesn't do a great deal of talking.
Yeah, you can see that. Which is why you put Henderson in there, I guess. But I just think the greater loss is Henderson in the middle.
Oh, I completely agree with you. Onto the midfield. Thoughts?
Well, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because we're talking as if we've put out a shock in midfield. But, I mean, you've got one of the greatest midfielders in the world in Thiago. You've got our dependable man, Gini Wijnaldum, plays up in big games. And Curtis Jones was the pick of the three for me, who for some reason got subbed off when I thought he was playing very well.
So, he played well.
I
was surprised to see him start. Were you?
No.
I thought he'd either start Milner or Kabak.
I guess Kabak was my preference, and I thought Henderson would be in the middle. But if Henderson was at centre-back, I did think he'd get the nod. And I say that because I personally don't think Milner is good enough to play week in, week out for us anymore. Love him as a guy. He's obviously still a decent enough squad player. But my view on Milner would be that we can kind of carry him and he can do a solid enough job when we're at full strength and on form. When we need him to do something, like win a game or something like that, I just don't think he's good enough at this stage of his career, sad to say. But
the thing about Milner,
if you're subbing him on alongside Fabinho and Henderson, different story. I think.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it was 1-1 when Curtis goes off and Milner comes on. So my point becomes a bit moot here. But Milner, when he came onto the pitch, amongst the reasons Klopp loves him, I think, is that he'll carry out an instruction. He was making runs into the box, which our midfielders weren't, the three that started weren't doing. I mean, it's not Thiago's game. It probably wasn't the instruction of Wijnaldum's position. But I don't know. Curtis is absolutely lovely on the ball. Don't get me wrong. I love watching him play football. But it was quite, I think it's quite a big game and also a tactically important game for a young lad to come into. Obviously, you know, the third midfielder in a midfield three isn't Curtis Jones's natural position in terms of the one he's grown up playing, I wouldn't have said. But do you think he's ready there? He's there tactically to be playing in those games?
I do, yeah. And I say that because I was about to ask you this, but I mean, he's 20 now, so he's not really young. He's not a super young, you know, breakthrough talent. Phil Foden's younger than him, I believe. So where would you rate him alongside players like Declan Rice, Mason Mount, Foden, I guess? Because I think he is a top talent. And I think it's a coincidence that our control of the game went a little bit when he went off. And I think Genie noticeably faded. I thought Milner didn't really... he made some runs into the box, but I don't really think he had an impact on the game. Shaqiri might as well not played.
Yeah, Shaqiri didn't have his finest appearance, did he? I agree. I think Curtis Jones is a brilliant player. I just think he needs to start affecting games more. I think he's a technical level above Mason Mount in terms of what he can do with the ball, but Mason Mount affects games more.
That, but Mason Mount does a lot less defensively. Curtis Jones has become actually quite a good presser. He works very hard in that midfield now.
I reckon Chelsea coaching staff would disagree with you there.
Maybe. Like, but I think that is an area that he's definitely improved on.
He has.
Yeah. And if this mistakes hadn't have happened, you would probably have said that our midfield three were pretty comfortable.
Because
it didn't come from losing the game from midfield, did it? It came from individual mistakes.
It didn't come from losing the game in midfield, but I didn't feel like we were going to win the game in midfield. Like the identity of our midfields previously has been intensity. Mm. Obviously, that changes a little bit, what with new personnel, like Thiago's newly learning the system. I just think you're playing with a different midfield proposition when you play with Thiago and Jones. Obviously, it's a highly technical midfield in terms of the ability on the ball that those three have got. It's just a different way to beat teams. And when Mane and Firmino aren't at the races, and like you said, Salah, you know, despite his goal return, hasn't looked to be hurting teams as effectively. I'm struggling to see how we're going to be scoring goals.
Yeah, and that's probably the biggest disappointment for me is Thiago. And it puts the extra pressure on someone like Curtis Jones, because Thiago is obviously not going to do the legwork. But the biggest disappointment about Thiago is, without doubt, his tendency to pick up stupid bookings. Considering he's a veteran of the game, isn't he? And has been at the top level for loads of years. He is an absolute animal in slide tackles. He just gets booked for the most stupid challenges, within 5 minutes of every game. And it shackles him, because he then can't afford to make professional fouls when you need him to break up play.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I used to say the same thing about Lucas Leiva. Like, when Lucas got booked, you may as well hook him, because it totally changes his effectiveness on the game. Thiago's a baffling one for me. I love watching him play. He's obviously he's a stunning footballer, isn't he? Like, when he's the sort of player that you just want him on the ball. You just want, find Thiago. But it's that next move.
I feel for him a bit as well, though, because he hasn't got the platform to succeed at the moment. You know, when he signed for us, he probably thought, I'm going to be playing with Fabinho at the base and alongside Wijnaldum or Henderson. And they'll do a lot of, or Keita, and they'll do a lot of running for me. They'll press and I'll have a lot of the ball and a lot of space, because there'll be so many runners.
Yeah.
And he hasn't got any of that. He's having to do a lot more defensive work than he's probably used to.
Yeah.
We're not dominating games, and the pace of everything, like even Robbo and Trent bombing forward because they don't have the cover, that affects the options that he has in front of him.
Oh, absolutely.
So it is, it's a bit of a poison chalice, and I do feel for him, but I am very disappointed in him at the same time.
Are you? See, I think he's shown that he's got all the ingredients to work when we're working. I know you'd expect a world-class midfielder to come into the side and pick your level up, but
I'm more disappointed because he.
What are you disappointed about?
Well, yeah. he's another one who's in that bracket of playing under par. You know, I do think that the injuries are savage we've had. There's absolutely no need to beat about the bush there. And they're obviously going to make us worse. But if our players were playing to their even par level, so not even like necessarily on red hot form, I think we'd be okay. We'd be second, I think, comfortably.
I still think we'll come second. But my thing about Thiago is he's a dictator. He's a facilitator and a dictator. He's a pass before the pass man. He's a get the ball quickly, change the direction of it, fizz it into feet, get things moving quickly. It doesn't really help his case. I know you love Gini Wijnaldum, but how people can be watching Liverpool at the moment and say that Thiago's slowing us down when he's playing next to Wijnaldum, who takes the ball, takes five touches, turns, sticks his arse out, and then passes it backwards. How people can be saying Thiago's slowing the ball down, I don't know. Jones is another one who's guilty of taking too many touches sometimes. I think if Thiago's game is about increasing the intensity of the ball's movement, not the runners in midfield, because he's not going to increase our intensity with his running, but he can increase our intensity by moving the ball quickly. He's obviously limited by those around him.
Yeah, and that's what I mean, that he hasn't really got the platform to succeed. But I do think if you're a world-class player, and he is, you should be able to deal with that. And we've signed what we perceive as, you know, arguably the best central midfielder in the world at the time. Mm. You'd probably put Kevin De Bruyne in front of him. But, you know, let's say top five central midfielder in the world then.
Yeah.
He should be able to deal with that and cope with the fact that we've lost some players, and he should still be able to dictate games. And at no stage yesterday did I think that Thiago was running the show.
Well, I'll be totally honest with you. I probably thought we should have hooked him when he got booked.
Same. We got booked after like a couple of minutes, didn't he?
Yeah, I don't mean hooking straight away, but it was getting to the point where I was texting you saying I'm worried about
him. Yeah, he's a red card waiting to happen, for one. I think he's better further forward. I think his lack of pace has exposed us. I can't remember. I think it was Chelsea. It was Man United when he was tracking Pogba. He literally looked like he was running through quicksand. But I agree with you that he's a master facilitator, and he's been hindered at the moment by our poor form. But at the same time, I would expect someone like him, who's a senior player in the team now, to affect games more, and he should be the one who's going to help us get out of this.
Yeah, I've seen enough of him to be excited about him still.
Yeah, and I'm not one of the ones who's criticising him for slowing the team down and like it's not going to work. I'm just more disappointed because I really thought that, you know, that was the missing piece for us, and particularly in the games that we've dropped points in against bottom half the table teams, he was the signing that should be the key to the door.
He should. I know what you mean. It's quietly going under the radar that Sadio Mane's bang off form at the moment.
Yeah,
I don't think it's helping him.
Is a worry.
I don't think it's helping Thiago that the forward pass, like you say, it's not so much Robertson and Trent as it used to be, because they're not adopting as higher positions without the centre backs. So the men Thiago's finding, Firmino and Mane, it's not quite working.
Yeah, and he fizzes it in with such ferocity. It needs to stick. And on form, you know, you'd have Firmino flicking it on to others and bringing others into play. But he's, one, the runs aren't the same. And two, it's not sticking when he finds feet anyway. And Salah's a great example of this as well. And I have said he's the top scorer currently. But he's also become incredibly predictable and not great at protecting the ball. And Mane, you're right, it's gone under the radar a bit. I don't think his injuries this season have helped. I don't feel like he's fully fit at times. And he's that kind of, I think he's got away with it because he still looked dangerous when he's played badly. Whereas Salah's had a couple of absolute horror shows where he's just been completely bossed, like Luke Shaw completely bossed him.
But Salah can do what Torres did, where he'll have a stinker and then he'll pop up and score.
Exactly.
Whereas
exactly.
Mane tends to score when he's pairing.
Yeah.
You tend to be able to look at a game early and think, I think Mane's going to bag one here. But Salah can just sort of turn something magic on in a moment. I mean, he did it against City. He toasted Diaz for the break through to the penalty. And then,
I mean, what you'd say about both And I'm going to come on to Firmino in a minute, but he, both of them are in the Alisson category of not playing particularly well at the moment, but still very capable. And I, an off-form Mane is still a very dangerous Mane. He was bad yesterday, but his play in recent weeks has deserved more, I think, than what he's got so far.
Yeah, it's fair enough.
His goal return is a bit low, but I mean, he's still a threat. And I'm sure he's a threat. And also, come back.
And also Cancelo, who arguably has been one of the best players in the league this season, let alone best players in City's team.
Yeah, that's true.
It didn't affect us going forwards, really.
No.
He was quieter than I was expecting him to be in their attacking phases.
Yeah.
Which you know, that's obviously a credit to Mane in a sense. See Minamino's goal?
I did. I texted you in straight away saying, that's a blow.
It was a beauty as well.
It was a real beauty. He was actually half decent. I watched the game. He's got a weird... I don't know whether it's like a language barrier thing, but it reminded me of when we lifted the cup, the Premier League trophy. And do you remember he was kind of like lurking at the back because he was new on the scene there and no one was speaking to him. I remember obviously Southampton chasing the game and there was a water break. And again, like they all came together and they're all like pumped up. They're going for the equaliser.
Yeah, it was a mad game, that one. Newcastle down to 10 men for ages.
Absolutely mental game, yeah. And Minamino's, he just looks lost.
Yeah,
he's kind of like standing to the side. Yeah, I did literally feel sorry to him. He's like standing to the side of the circle, not really listening to instructions, and no one's actually saying anything to him. And I also think it affects him on the pitch that people don't give him the ball when he does actually make good runs.
Yeah, I mean, he obviously came over in January last year and then immediately went into a national lockdown. So he was basically living isolated lifestyle in England.
The difference between him, though, and someone else is that nothing Minamino has done yet has shown us that he's going to be a world-class player for us.
Oh, absolutely.
He has had chances, and if he comes good, great. I haven't seen anything that convinces me that he's going to have a good Liverpool career, have you?
No, but it's a risk-free signing, isn't it? I mean, we'll probably fetch 15 million for him in the summer. I'd imagine we'll...
It's a risk-free signing, but it has a knock-on effect because we didn't sign another striker because of that. And I think that's partly why Firmino has been so poor of late. And as the final piece of the three, I think he's at the top of the pile for me in terms of where my criticism is going. And again, I love him. He's like that beloved bit of clothing that you know you love it, but you should get rid of it. And the reason I say that is because, to be fair, I have not. I say that because I had a chat on Twitter with someone who was saying that they basically think that for me, it's time. He never thought he'd be saying this, but it's time for Firmino to go. And I agree.
To go, yeah.
And I kind of agree. I don't necessarily think he needs to go, but I do think that it's not form anymore because he's been so poor for about a year now. And that's
but
not
so,
a drop-off
so
in form.
We, though? We've been poor since the restart, really.
Yeah, but at times we've also been brilliant, but he never has. Since the virus happened, I can't really recall a performance from Firmino where I thought he's brilliant.
The last two wins, I think. Against Tottenham, he was fantastic, I thought. And
you think
against
he was
West
brilliant,
Ham,
he was like as good as he used to be. Brilliant. He was better, I thought. He was, and that's about it. He was better.
Yeah, I'll give you that. I mean, going back to your point about Minamino and the signing of him, do you not think that spending a little amount on him facilitated spending a decent amount on Jota? Whom, if Jota had been fit, Firmino could easily have had his time out of the team. It could have been freshened up. It could have been rotated round. I think Jota's been a massive miss.
Yeah, yeah. No, I do agree. But I also think that if you're the champions and you're serious about competing on multiple fronts, Jota's not enough. When you play three attackers, you need probably a minimum of two to cover them. We've got one, Jota, who can play in all three of those positions. We're heavily reliant on him.
Yeah, we are. And Klopp's had this dynasty, if you can call it that, over the short period of time that it's been. Klopp's had this dynasty without a proper number nine ever in the squad. The closest Klopp's had to a proper number nine has been Danny Ings for a little bit at the start. And then Solanke.
Which is mental. Divock.
And then Dom Solanke. Well, I don't even count.
No.
Yeah.
And that's where you've got to credit Firmino, because he he's turned that role into something totally unique. And no matter what happens, he's a Liverpool legend and he's been absolutely critical to our success. But I do think his performance levels have dropped consistently over about a year's period now. And for me, I think it's time to make changes rather than continue to play underperforming players every week.
Well, that brings us on nicely to the point I wanted to raise. Have you seen someone put a tweet up about the ages of our best 11 by the summer? So they're putting Matip in our deemed best 11.
Jesus.
Alisson 28,
yeah.
Trent 22, Matip 30, Virgil 30, Robertson 27, Fabinho 28, Thiago 30, Henderson 31, and then Firmino, Mane, Salah all 29. Mm. We're on the brink of needing a serious reshuffle.
Yeah. I think we need renovating badly.
We don't seem to have many lads in those middle ages. I know Keita and Oxlade-Chamberlain are the age that you'd need them to be at to be peaking and being the next wave, and they're both not. Yeah, they're both constantly injured. And then you've got the wave of, you know, the Harvey Elliotts and so on who are just...
What were the midfield three that you said there?
He's put Thiago, Fabinho, Henderson as the three.
Right.
Obviously, you've got Curtis Jones coming through the ranks as well. But we were at our best when our lads were 25, 26, 27.
Yeah, and Carragher always goes on about this, but it's also the time that they've played together. You normally replace one or two bits of the puzzle, or not necessarily replace, but tweak. And they've all played together, particularly the front three now, for a long, long time. So not only are they sort of maybe past their peak, although 29, you assume that they're still in their peak, but
especially given the condition of Salah and Mane.
Yeah, if you look at like the great Barcelona threes, they have never played more than, I believe, three seasons together, all three of them, and we're now in our fourth season, all three of them. And I just think there's a bit of burnout there as well. So not only are they aging, but we haven't freshened it up in any way at all. And you'd obviously hope Jota would come in and resume where he left off, but again, there's a lot of pressure on Jota. He's come from Wolves. Yes, he hit blistering form, but
yeah,
you're looking for him to fill all three world-class positions.
You're right, and I think a little bit of credit for his form goes to the fact that he was probably afforded a lack of pressure, given that he was deemed by basically everyone to be a rotation option.
That's true. Yeah,
and he came in with less expectation in a sense.
Yeah, that's a really good point, I think. And I do wonder, obviously I hope that he's going to come back on red hot form, but I do wonder now he's, like, it's strange that obviously when we signed him, people were saying, oh, he's never going to play for us. He'll be a rotation option. Now people are saying that he's actually a big fish. For the first time in his career, he's kind of like become a big name, hasn't he? But just to what you said there about pressure, if we go back to the psychological impact, if we put a positive spin on it, my hope is that obviously, the City game has ended our title hopes, but I hope that it will relieve a bit of pressure on the players. Now, a few more bad results, and I think the pressure will obviously ramp up, particularly if someone like Everton overtakes us. But I do wonder whether psychologically, now that like the players seem to have accepted that the title's over, there won't be as much of a pressure on them.
Yeah, it's top four in Champions League for me. That's where the pressure turns back on. Obviously, we've got Leicester at the weekend and then going to the Champions League the following week. The Leipzig away fixture is now being played in Hungary. I agree with you. It's an important turning point in the season, isn't it? If we do Leipzig, get through there, if we beat Leicester, things look very different. Let's reconvene in a couple of weeks and pick up on that one. But... yeah.
Well, I said it last episode, but for me, it's about survival this season. To get top four, decent Champions League showing, get our boys back, make some decent transfers. To be fair, I do think we need to shift some deadwood as well, and then we properly go for it again next season.
Let's hope the fans are back as well. I think we missed them against City, didn't we? But anyway, Chris, thanks again, mate. We'll touch base after the Leicester game.
Yeah, cheers, happy everyone. Days. Thanks for listening, everyone.